the hardest thing for people to get is, it's a combination of things, depending on how you look at it. One is that who you are in your essence is identical with the divine or the absolute. And conversely, any thought, feeling, or sensation that you have is not you. The first one, that you're identical with the absolute, is it's important to consider it, acknowledge it. And if you're serious about waking up, to realize that's what you wake up to, or it wakes up to itself, basically. Like I talked last time about isolating the subjective element. It's kind of a turnaround or something. It's paradoxical that because your true nature is consciousness itself, and who you are not is an object, you know, of thought, feeling, or sensation, some kind of object within the field of awareness that you are. The way to realize who you are is to detach from those thought or sense objects. So two of the Mahavakyas from ancient Hindu scripture, sayings of Vedanta, one is, thou art that. In Sanskrit, tat tvamasi, thou art that, which is to say you're identical with the absolute. That's important, like I said. And then the other one is neti neti, which is not this, not that. And they go together. The trick is, who you are in your essence is not an object. I mean, we just established that. It's not this, not that. It's not this object, it's not that object. It's not a sense, feeling, emotion, thought. That's not you. Those are more like, I like to call them phantoms, but they pass through your awareness and they change, and they don't have what you might call a self nature, where they exist of themselves. They depend on causes and conditions. They arise, they fall, constantly passing through awareness. And who we are is the awareness of those things. It's just, the key is to detach from those things, like to notice a thought, feeling, or sensation, and to look at it curiously. Like it's a curious thing. You look at it and see that it is, without judgment. And that's the real key, is just to notice it without judgment. Or if there is judgment, notice that. But to be who you are is to be that noticing awareness. And it's not like if you tell someone you're identical with the truth itself, with consciousness, it's almost like you want to look around and be like, oh yeah, where is that? Like, where's the, like, I as an object, I'm going to look for this object called the divine. Well, the not this, not that guideline tells you and reminds you. It's easy to come back to. I mean, you could forget, but you come back to it. And it's usually some kind of problematic thought, feeling, sensation, experience. Like, oh, I'm not good enough, you know, or something. And it's a presumed I that's based on a thought, feeling, sensation. In other words, it's equating those sense experiences and those thoughts with identity. So these sayings remind us that, first of all, we're not that. It's a gentle reminder to notice that. Just notice. If it's a thought, feeling, or experience, it cannot be you. You're not going to grasp that like it's an experience you're going to have. Who's going to have the experience? Again, subject, object. It's tricky. So just notice the objects that arise. Again, thoughts, feelings, sensations. And just gently remember, oh, I'm not that. Like a depressive structure within the psyche that may come up. Again, it's like, oh, I'm not good enough. Or it's just going to be laden with judgments. You're going to see that and you're going to feel a depressive tone, for example, of like, we've seen cartoons of like some figure that's like covered with a wet blanket and it's just sort of trudging around and it's got a gray rain cloud over its head. And no matter what happens, it feels sad and it just doesn't, you know, it's looking around, doesn't really want to live. It's imaginary. But the experience of that is unpleasant, and it is what we call suffering. It's mentally generated suffering that's caused by an attachment to those things as if that's who we were. And that's what we call ego. Ego is an attachment to those thoughts, feelings, and sense experiences as if that's who we were. So like a structure within the psyche might have that depressive tone, and it's just a presumption. It just slips in there because you're not paying attention. And it says, oh, I'm depressed. I'm, you know, and now that's depressing. I mean, to like live there, live in that. Like the depressive structure comes up. And then again, we have the subject-object assumption, like, oh, I'm depressed. This is my evidence that quote-unquote I, whoever that is depressed. And that's bad, that's wrong. It's more judgment on top of it. Like I said, it's laden with judgment. And so it's just very negative and very heavy. And then that can be unbearable. So we think, oh, I don't even want to think about that. So we repress the thought and the feeling. And then we go look for something to feel good about ourselves. Some activity, some achievement, something. As a compensation, a distraction from our unwillingness to really examine these structures without judgment. I don't know if the term objectively is correct there. You witness them. See, that part of the presumption is that there are objects there. Now, there's an experience. There's a subject-object experience. The object arises. That its see-itself nature is illusory. What I mean by that is it's not permanent. It's not real. The definition of the real, like with a capital R, is that which is eternal and unchanging. These things are ephemeral and they change. That's a sign like, oh, okay, that's not me. And, you know, it's not anyone else either. So if someone's exhibiting a certain behavior, that's not the sum total of who they are. That's a symptom of a certain disease we call egotism. That's just how things are. And that changes too. And our commitment is to wake ourselves up and wake up the planet, wake up everyone else. And so we don't hold others hostage to their negativity either. That's part of it. That's what allows us to be compassionate. But it's interesting to me. It's a kind of automatic because we're programmed to think this way. We're programmed to think this way. Someone says, oh, who you are in your essence is identical with the divine. Your true nature is already free, something like that. And again, the mind that we are identified with then scans to find that as if it were an object that could be found. There's a saying, the one you're looking for is the one that's looking. That's another way to put it. That you're the awareness that notices things, but itself is not a thing. It's not an object. It is the subject, is the noticing awareness. And that when we attach to those experiences, it creates this sense of self. It creates objects, like we become an object to ourselves, and then the objects that we experience plague us because we have this imaginary self. It's just unexamined. It's unexamined in a way where the judgments are noticed and become very still, very quiet, and just notice what's there. Notice the judgments that arise, any judgments of judgments, that kind of thing. And if we hold on to that, you know, stay with that, that's part of what we learn, is how to stabilize our attention. That's the essence of meditation, noticing the thoughts, feelings, and sensations that are passing through our awareness without releasing our focus. It's not a tense or stressful experience. And if it is, that's the object that you can attend to, is the stressful, tense experience. Who's noticing, in a sense? Notice that. It tends to relax that stressful experience a bit. Just notice. It's not good or bad, you see. It starts to relax. You think, oh, good. No, that's a judgment. It's a comparison. And it, when you label one thing as good, then not having it is bad, and it sets up that polarity, and that's a form of suffering. But if you can hold that non-judgmental awareness, it's so innocent. I say that. If you can hold this non-judgmental awareness, like, are you good enough? Can you master the skills and ascend to the level of high mastery of noticing things? Like, do you hear that? Like, there is no such thing. There's no comparison. There are no levels. There's just the pure awareness that you already are. When you get caught up in judgment, it creates a false sense of self we call ego that generates suffering. When you notice things without judgment, those things relax, let go, and eventually the ego dies, it breaks, it gives up. And that freedom of awareness is just ever present and is noticed as reality itself, meaning the eternal and unchanging. Witnessing the world, which is this passing phantasmagoria of changing phenomena. Now, people want to be happy and they want to escape suffering. It's tricky, though, to think that the state of freedom and peacefulness is somehow better than anything else. That's a judgment. It's just, there's the real and there's the illusion. The satisfaction of what I'm calling awareness of reality, just awareness of your true nature, awareness, one could say awareness of awareness. It sounds like a conundrum, but it's not. It's like a dawning of a light or something that you just notice. And it is who you are, and it's extraordinarily beautiful. I hesitate to say blissful because I think that word is easily misconstrued. It is more like a beautiful sunrise or a sunset. It's subtle and yet really beautiful and and satisfying. It's satisfying because it is, so there's nothing to compare it to. When judgment is embraced, it blocks that from your awareness, and so you think the world exists and that you're a suffering creature, mortal creature within this system of suffering, this pointless machine of grinding gears and birth and death that's sometimes called samsara. All that's required is to notice its nature. When I say it, I mean the world, the objects that pass through your awareness. Notice them without judgment, and it starts to relax and dissolve all that. But those two sayings that thou art that and not this, not that, those are guidelines. They're really important. They're two of the four Mahavakyas, the great sayings in Vedanta. If you don't start with that, or if you don't sort of assume that and have that as your basis for spiritual exploration, you're not going to get very far. Exoteric religion, meaning conventional religion, typically presumes that you're separate from God, for example. Or, you know, in the East, maybe you're this suffering creature and nirvana is really far away or something. There's an idea that we're separate. It seems to be a hurdle for many people. And I've noticed that working with people, and it's tricky. We get caught up in this business of survival and playing the game of life and society, and just we forget to do the work. It's that separative I sense that we're calling the ego that's the problem. And it's just something you have to get focused on and notice and practice in the way that I'm talking about. And the freedom and the satisfaction, and in some sense the happiness of, I almost said sun sense by accident. Yeah, it's like a rising sun. It just is the way when the dawn comes up, the birds start singing. It's just wonderful. There's this feeling of happiness. And it's kind of like that when awareness of your true nature dawns. It's like that. It's not an object, so it's just within. You'll feel a certain radiance or happiness. And immediately when I say that just now, I notice the mind wants to grasp at that, wants to judge it as good or bad, dismiss it as bad perhaps. There's many reasons for that. Our parents teach us what's right and wrong, and sometimes they teach us that we're separate and that's how it is, and we just need to put our head down and work hard and trust Jesus or some other conventional take on it, on how to live a religious or spiritual life. Like I said earlier, the exoteric, meaning the outer, more conventional way of looking at it, where we're seen as separate. I mean, there's something about conventional Christianity that they'll say if you have faith, you know, it's almost as if you'll have contact with Christ, perhaps is the way it's phrased, something like that. And there's a sense of redemption that's possible, where they'll say, you know, you don't deserve this, you're a sinner, but Christ redeemeth, or something. And then you turn your attention to the scriptures and so on. And it may be that what's recognized is like the dawning of a certain radiance emanating from within, but it's attributed to an external cause. But because we're taught that it can reach us and that it's in a sense within us, and somehow we have to get to that place where we're willing to admit that our nature is spiritual. It may be attributed to Jesus, for example, to the Christ, to that exoteric process. But if it's attended to in a certain way, like the assurances in the Bible that God is always with us, for example, and like somehow within us, somehow essentially, it's like we're taught we're separate, and yet if we're good, maybe God can get in there and do something good. I mean, there's got to be a sense at some point that we deserve it. Like maybe we've repented of our sins. I don't know what that is exactly that gets one to that point. And it can be helpful, I think. It's just, I'm talking about waking up to reality, and those glimmers of that light have to be noticed, recognized, and sustained or practiced, or, you know, it's not as if as a separate self we sustain it. It's more because of these sayings that I am that, or thou art that, and not this, not that, in the way I described, that practice, those assumptions can lead us to a place where we realize the fullness of who we are. If it's an exoteric process, there's going to be a stumbling block there where, because of that presumption of separateness, it won't be complete. The completion of it is the I am consciousness that we are. So you have places in the Bible where, you know, sayings like, I am that I am, you know, that's usually attributed to some divine element that's somewhere else, that's in a distant heaven, that's looking down on us, and we're separate. That's not true. That's a confusion about who we are. And it's a taboo. It is a taboo. Like, look at cult leaders that say, they'll say, I am God, kneel down and worship me. And you're looking at him going, man, that guy's nuts. We know that when someone's deluded, yeah, cult leaders try to claim the mantle of some imagined divinity as an authoritarian attempt to control people. And people are often gullible and buy into the promises of a charismatic leader who abuses them, you know, tells them they're special, love bombs them, and so on. And then they get caught up in it, and we see the results, and they're horrible. So no, I'm not suggesting that at all, but there's a taboo against this. So the Upanishads tell us, thou art that. You're identical with what they call Brahman, which is just another name for the Absolute. Yeah, this notion of separateness is not limited to religion. It's everywhere. That presumption of self is everywhere. The world thrives on it. It runs on it. Awakening transforms the world because it eliminates that illusion of self, one person at a time, and brings in an element of suchness, of reality, that is, it's a blessing, it's peaceful, and there's no other satisfaction, really. There's temporary satisfaction from food and other pleasures, but those pass. This is a permanent, like I said, reality is eternal and unchanging, and awareness of reality is I laugh because the value of it is such that it's immediately apparent to me. When I say me, I'm not talking about a separative self. I'm talking about the truth of who I am. It sounds egotistical when I talk like that. Who's talking like that, you know? Find out for yourself, you know? But start with this notion that your true nature is eternal and unchanging, and when you become aware of it, again, not as an object, but as your own essence, you'll just become happy. Like the sun rising, it's beautiful. Just notice what troubles you, for example, and then notice if it's a thought, feeling, or sensation. It will be. It will be. You'll be thinking about something. You'll have an experience. Instead of noticing without judgment, there'll be that presumption of self or selves. You know, it could be others who you have some judgment about, like either someone who's better or someone who's worse, in the sense maybe they've attained something or they've had more money or more influence or more this, or they have more pleasure, they own 7 yachts or something, I don't know. All of that is ephemera, just passing dream objects. They're not even real. They're not even really objects. I mean, they are, but that's only in our experience. When we start to wake up, we realize they're empty and they don't have any real substance. And that really is blissful in a sense, that it dissolves that subject-object dualism. And the only thing left is to share it, because it's immediately apparent that it's, as Jesus put it, the pearl of great price. I mean, it's just what we're all here for. And yet it's that teaching, that inculcation we get when we're kids, that we're separate is pervasive. So that's why I'm saying these things, is perhaps someone will hear it and practice. Find out the truth. The truth is not an object. It's not some conspiracy. It's not, you know, that some aliens are running things behind the scenes. It's not anything like that. Those are more ephemera, phantoms. And they won't make you happy. They're frustrating and miserable. You may notice that you have a frustrated and miserable sense of self that wants to keep going. Just notice these things. Like what I just said, if you notice that you have a frustrated sense of self that's sort of addicted to being miserable, the trick is to notice that without judgment. What typically happens is we judge it immediately. Like, oh, I have this self that's addicted to being miserable, and you know, and you reach for the pill or the bottle or the sex partner or the religion or the job or the athletic achievement or something as a way to suppress, distract, and forget about this suffering, this misery. Ego is just misery. Self, to be a separate self, is just, you're lost, homeless, bereft. And yet, the way to see that, it's really innocent to be curious to, I mean, that sounds like a big story, you know, oh, I'm just this miserable, lost human or something. Well, break it down to your experience in the moment. What's occupying your attention? What thoughts, what feelings, what, you know, start somewhere. You know, you can assume that your true nature is free of all this, and that's what you're trying to find. And that what you're finding is not an object, it's what arises within you as a realization when you utterly detach from objects as being substantial in the way that I'm describing. And just practice that. Hold on to it. It's not that hard to do. It just takes, I want to say a desire to be free. And it's often brought up, we've talked about this before, about desire being an obstacle to realization, because if we desire it as an object, it sets up a conflict and we get caught up in that. What I'm saying is wanting to be free is wanting what's already true. So the more you connect with what's already true, the less it's a desire and more it's a realization. So it's like burn up your desire in the fire of realization. You can do it. I'm here to say that I did it. I had help from teachers, from really good books and videos and so on. The teachings are available. Just, you know, if you want to do this, then you're free to do it. And you don't have to do it. You can just continue doing what you've been doing. I just couldn't live like that because I was miserable. I think to outward appearances, I was somewhat normal. Maybe even happy and achieving things. Internally, I was extremely dissatisfied with this sense of hopelessness, just at the root of who I felt myself to be at the time. We can be free of that.